Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Damage Report. I am furiously eating a cough drop because I've been sick my entire life. And is that sick? Jared Jackson.
Not at all. Hey, but you know what? First of all, happy JR Wednesday to everyone. Mm-hmm. Happy big news day, JR Wednesday.
Well, you bring up an interesting point because you keep saying Wednesdays are big news days.
Right.
What's the big news today?
The big news today, day two of the Senate impeachment trial. After the rules were set down in place yesterday through contentious hearings, actually, it went into the wee early morning hours. The only interesting part, well, not the only, but the contentious part happened after midnight, officially Wednesday.
That's true. I'm not sold. But anyway, and thank you, by the way, to everyone who was really excited yesterday for what was supposed to be my first appearance on the Chris Cuomo show. It didn't happen because of the impeachment saga. It bumped our segment, unfortunately.
Big news so Wednesday.
Trump has ruined everything.
John Iadarola gets bumped by Trump somehow.
But anyway, maybe it'll happen at some point in the future. We'll see. You know what? We got a lot that we got to get to, though.
That was his loss.
So it was everybody. This was a truth's loss. But anyway, we got a lot that we're gonna get to. So why don't we jump right into it? The impeachment trial is on, and if you are watching it yourself, you might be a little bit bored. If you're watching it through the lens of Fox News, though, you might be getting a very different picture of what's actually going on. And that's what they want. So take a look at, this is basically a segment where it's Fox News telling on itself. Mm-hmm. So Fox and Friends is not hiding at all that they want to be the only source for Trump supporters on this news. Take a look at this little mashup from this morning.
If you watched some of it, there were snippets, and we're showing you the good stuff. It was unbelievably boring.
Yeah, it's basically.
I don't know how people can follow it.
We watched so that you don't have to watch the entire thing. If you watched it, you felt like you were watching opening arguments. Those haven't even started yet.
Right.
This was just the debate over the rules. And I was sitting back watching last night thinking, this is a circus. And then I thought, and then my wife, Jen, corrected me and said, no, at least circuses are entertaining.
I don't think the majority of people watch. I think they just turned to us to be able to summarize it for them. Because it was so long.
Yeah. We'll summarize it for you. You don't have to actually listen to the information. You'll get all of it from us. Wink, wink. Or will you? Or will they just tell you it's too boring? Oh, it's going on for a really long time. First of all, we're gonna have this trial for like a couple days or something. Mm-hmm. It's gonna be very short. But no matter how short it is, it's always gonna be too long and too boring for them. Like very briefly, you all know all of this. But if you think this story is something boring, take a look at what's really going on. So the president, in a bid to possibly get reelected, turns the screws on one of our allies who's being pressured by Russian-backed separatist forces. Our president, oddly, doesn't have any loyalty to our allies, weirdly doesn't care about the invading force. So he decides to go behind Congress's back and stop military aid that's been appropriated from going to them unless they launch a phony investigation against his domestic political enemies. The whole thing gets caught. He gets caught in it. It becomes a big issue. He gets impeached. Super exciting. The ratings should be amazing. Was that not exciting enough?
Where was the sex? That's the problem.
Well, he got a pass for all the crimes related to sex and the hush money.
Well,
and all
you mean
that.
The locker room talk and the boys will be boys. Mm-hmm. And it's just Trump punching back because he's a counterpuncher. All that stuff that you'll say when it's the salacious things that he's actually been involved in. But again, this is a playbook that Fox and Friends has gone to before. Maybe even other shows on Fox. They did it with Mueller. They did it with Ukraine. They kept saying, look how boring this is. This is totally boring. Oh, look at the Democrats droning on and on about the same old stuff. And actually, that same old stuff is information. If you want to go and look at the details of any kind of trial that has any kind of significance, from murder trials to the extortion and corruption, all these things that happen and any other daily things, there's boring parts of those trials, but it doesn't mean that they're useless. Mm-hmm. So everything that happens in Congress is boring to the common folk because it's 6 hours of people droning on in front of a camera. So I think it's pretty obvious that they want you to think, first off, it's boring, there's nothing to it. But you know what? When things happen, when fireworks do happen, you know what they say? These Democrats are putting on this circus of a show. They're performing for the cameras so they can have something to go back and show people on TV of what they've done. Which one is it?
Yeah, damn
if it gets exciting and they go crazy on something, or something gets someone gets animated, then they're just performing for the cameras. If they're being businesslike and going through every step of the way of what's happening, oh, it's boring. You don't need to watch.
Too professional. Yeah. You want something exciting? Rudy Giuliani. You remember him? Yeah, he was off pretending to be a diplomat because the president sent him, and so he hired this guy that was apparently stalking and was thinking about murdering a US ambassador. That is some James Bond stuff. Let's talk about that then. Oh, you don't want to. You don't want to talk about the exciting stuff. You want to pretend it's boring. But here's the thing. Fox News has obviously multiple hours, and depending on when you tune in, you're going to get a different sort of story. So if you do it during the straight news hours, you might have seen things like Kellyanne Conway sort of hilariously implying that Trump releasing the aid the day after the whistleblower complaint gets to Congress. It's just a coincidence. Nobody's shown it isn't a coincidence. You got the Fox and Friends thing, but then you also have their big opinion shows. And so Sean Hannity, I want you to like, when we say state TV, sometimes that doesn't communicate well enough what's really going on. So take a look at how he spent his time while covering the impeachment trial.
Signed the biggest tax cut in history. He cut more burdensome regulation than any of his predecessors. He negotiated major new trade deals people thought could never happen. Mexico, Canada, Japan, our Western European allies, and the big one last week with China, $220 billion for Americans in 2 short years. He pulled us out of the horrendous climate accord. He pulled us out of the horrific Iranian nuclear deal. No more bribing mullahs in Iran.
So he literally was just showing things that he considers accomplishments of the president. It is just raw propaganda. Like in the same way that in Ghostbusters 2, there was that big like flood of just hatred and negative thoughts. It's just a flood of propaganda coming through. And by the way, like I know that it's just a whole bunch of things you don't really look, but I looked at the actual stuff on the list. First of all, he repeats the signed VA choice thing that Trump loves to lie about. Trump's lied over 100 times that he signed it. It was signed under Barack Obama. Hannity doesn't care what's true, so he just repeats it. Ends the war on coal is an accomplishment. What does that even mean? That's just a narrative thing. That doesn't mean anything. One of the things listed there as an accomplishment is fewer Americans on food stamps. Yeah, but they just cut the funding for food stamps. He didn't move them off into prosperity.
Nope.
He just took away their food stamps. That's an accomplishment? For the hungry.
These are accomplishments for conservatives. Have you destroyed anyone's life? Have you said you're doing something that you didn't do? All these are accomplishments for these guys. First off, the Ghostbusters reference. I hadn't even remembered that scene. That was a good reference. I enjoyed
that.
But it's constant how they continue to go through this. Now, how fast was that list flowing, and how much do they really expect their viewers to follow it?
We
go back
at
to the
all.
Fox and Friends before saying, hey, just listen to us. That's him pushing this scroll of quote unquote accomplishments, and then no one's actually going to look at any of those. They think their viewers are going to say, okay, millions of new jobs created. Let me look up where that is. What are those jobs created? Is it true in the first place? Mm-hmm. No, it doesn't matter. Here's a scroll of things that I'm going to let you think are accomplishments.
It's absolutely insane, but not from Sean Hannity, at least, shocking at all, because I remember just a few days ago on his radio show, he had something to say about propaganda. Take a listen to this and remember what you just saw.
It's unbelievable. Great gig, I guess, if he can get it. Lying, propagandizing, I guess, pays for people. Pays pretty well. So we'll watch that. But anyway, these are con artists now. You know, they're just liars. They're just advancing a political agenda.
There are people like that, actually. That was just a few days ago. And look, I share his concern with the grifters. Unfortunately, he's one of them. He's one of the most successful, one of the highest paid propagandists in the entire country.
Well, I know how to disprove your point about Sean Hannity being a propagandist. Remember doing Fast and Furious trials, and remember during Benghazi, and then Hillary Clinton testifying, and them talking about emails all the time. Remember them running lists of Obama accomplishments along the side and ignoring what was happening? I remember.
Yeah, remember took us out of that recession and everything. Remember, he listed in his thing of Trump's accomplishments that he killed all these terrorist leaders. Well, there was this one terrorist leader that Obama killed. It was kind of a big deal at the time, like kind of old news now, but big deal at the time. Anyway, and by the way, I just want to put a button on this entire thing by going back a couple of months And just, I want you to see how far things have shifted. Here was Steve Ducey back in September when we were still starting to learn the bounds of this scandal.
If the president said, you know, I'll give you the money, but you got to investigate Joe Biden, that is really off the rails wrong.
Yeah, Fox News, that is really off the rails wrong. Your whole thing is off the rails wrong. But the reason that we cover it is because this is how millions of Americans are going to get their news. They're not going to watch the raw footage. They're not going to see what's actually going on. It's going to be filtered either through the like just balls of the wall insanity of Sean Hannity or the slightly easier to digest Fox and Friends. It's all going to be sanitized. They're going to try to create apathy. Mm-hmm. It's not working really. Like we know that the majority of the country wants him to be removed, but those numbers would be even higher if you didn't have literal state TV operating 24/7 in America.
We've seen, and lastly on this for me at least, we've seen those studies about how Fox News viewers are the most uninformed or wrongfully informed on most major issues when it comes to anything American-wise. So they point out all the times we're the most watched. Everyone comes and watches us. Hey, only watch us. Don't watch the actual proceedings, which means you think they don't know that most of their viewers are misled because of their approach? And then after knowing that, saying only watch us because we want to continue to mislead you. So for the whatever small percentage of people who think, oh yeah, maybe they just get it wrong. No, they know when they're getting it wrong. They know the way they're slanting it, and they know that they're actually having an effect on Americans' perspective of what's really going on in their country. And that's, I don't know, if nothing else is anti-American, that definitely is. You're calling yourself the press and you're making sure Americans are uninformed on the most important issues.
Exactly. Okay, let's turn to one other angle on this. Donald Trump is off the World Economic Forum, but he is weighing in on the impeachment proceedings. And the thing about Trump is he has this obvious strategy where Mitch McConnell, the Republicans, are giving him exactly what he wants. What he wants is no discovery of documents, no witnesses, but he has to have his cake and eat it too. He has to pretend that he wants these things, even though just the slightest bit of pushback when he suggests that he wants these witnesses shows how ridiculous of a sham it is. So during a press conference in Davos, he told reporters he'd rather have National Security Advisor John Bolton testify, but the quote, the problem with John is that it's a national security problem. You can't have somebody who's at national security. If you think about it, John, he knows some of my thoughts. He knows what I think about leaders. And he went on to say, well, and I mean, beyond even that, if the, you know, someone left on bad terms, they can't testify. You don't like people testifying when they didn't leave on good terms. But you burn every bridge. That just means that nobody can ever testify against you. But so he was involved in national security, so he can't testify, obviously, which is convenient. Since we don't know what John Bolton knows, we're not going to hear because, I mean, he really wants it. He does, but like it's national security.
He wants the truth to come out. First of all, it's the first bit of truth he's actually said. He doesn't realize how revealing it is. You don't like people testifying when they didn't leave on good terms. What does that mean? It means he's going to tell the truth about everything that's happening. Because people leave on good terms will probably continue to protect you. That's the way it always works. Like, yeah, hey, they like me still. Hey, I didn't screw them over enough that they're actually ready to tell the truth and blow a lid off of everything that's been happening. He didn't leave on good terms. So elaborate on that. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if it was a press conference setting, if he's just talking, but the follow-up should be, so then, are you worried he's going to lie because he's mad? Or are you worried that he's going to tell the truth because he's mad? Yeah. He needs a direct yes or no response to that. Yeah. Which one is it then?
Yeah.
Why leaving on bad terms changes anything?
Yeah, and look, you know, so we can't have John Bolton because it's a national security thing. But thankfully, I mean, there are other people, theoretically, that could testify. It's like some people want Mick Mulvaney. But unfortunately, the president cited the same issue with regards to him. I mean, he'd love to have Mick go. He would, but you know, national security and, well, you know, Mike Pompeo's over at state, but I'd love to have Mike Pompeo testify, but again, that's a national security problem. Okay, well, you know, I mean, okay, we can't have any of the big guys, but there were other people, right? Like Rick Perry, he was involved in this. Trump made a similar comment saying he'd love for Energy Secretary to testify, but we're dealing with national security. So here is some advice to future corrupt presidents of the United States. When doing crimes, do them in the area of national security, because then anyone who has information about that as national security, what are you going to do? Yeah, we know that they're all involved in national security, diplomacy, all that stuff. They're involved in that because that's where you wanted to break the law. We still get to find out what was going on, or at the very least, in a functioning democracy, we should. Mm-hmm. And this is, by the way, we don't have the video, but this morning he literally said one of the reasons he's so confident during this impeachment process is we have all the material and they don't. He's admitting to obstruction of Congress, obstruction of justice by not turning over those documents. He's bragging about it at press conferences. That doesn't matter, really. Like, the Republicans are going to stick with him. Fox News is going to stick with him. But he is out there shouting how guilty he is in all this, how deserving of impeachment and removal he is.
Not even saying how much he has it all, and they don't, but also saying that information, apparently, which you can buy and you can read into this as being that information would allow them to have the final pieces to put this all together. Like, it's admitting that that information is not only kept only for me, but also it's the most important stuff. Yeah. It's the biggest admission, and he's done it a million times, along with Rudy Giuliani. But really fast, my last part to this is, if he's worried too much about national security, how about when he invited folks into the Oval Office and revealed a terrorist national security issues when it comes to another foreign country?
Israel,
yeah, when it was with Lavrov and Kislyak came in, and he decided to just let go of that information. How about when he makes phone calls to Ukraine about holding up aid, which he admits he did? That's not national security risk. Hey, and Sean Hannity listed that he stopped that disastrous Iran deal. That's a national security risk because it hurts other nations around that area, and it throws everything into turmoil. Mm-hmm. Actually allows them to develop nuclear weapons. Is that not a national security risk? Because he never cares about national security. And lastly, remember that time in Mar-a-Lago, one of his paid members, because they have enough money to, is around while he's getting detailed classified information about North Korea.
Yeah.
They took a picture of it and posted it on Facebook, and people were like, oh man, he's having open meetings in Mar-a-Lago about national security issues. He doesn't care about national security because his national security in his head is only if it's surrounding his national security to him is Trump security.
Yeah. And under any other president, Republicans would never accept a president implying that he can stop all testimony if it has anything to do with national security.
Those are three instances 100% of his national security issues. He's got many more.
Exactly. Okay, we're going to take a short break. Come back. Lots more after this.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Over the past few years, we have thankfully seen quite a bit of movement towards reform of bail programs in a number of different states, but there are areas where there's some pushback against those reforms as well. I want to focus now on what's been going on in New York, and we're joined by Wade McMullen, international human rights lawyer. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, John. Thanks for having me and for this discussion. It's so important.
I couldn't agree more. And so catch us up to speed with the situation in New York. What's been going on with bail reform?
Sure. So last year in the legislative session, we passed comprehensive bail reform, including a couple of other provisions that reform other aspects of our pretrial legal system. And let me start by just saying why that was necessary in the first place. So first of all, we needed bail reform. And thanks to this groundswell of a movement of directly impacted individuals and communities and advocates, it's now undisputed that money bail, is a huge driver of mass incarceration in this country and in New York. The way that works is that people who are charged with a crime have bail set So they're not talking about just people who've been sentenced or found guilty of a crime and then sent to jail. But if you're set, you have bail set. Bail is supposed to be a mechanism to release you from jail pending your trial. However, in effect, we now know that bail around the country is being used as a de facto way of keeping people in jail before they've ever been convicted of a crime, before they've had a chance to defend themselves in a court of law and be judged by a jury of their peers, are being punished and caged and sent to jail. This is ballooning the pretrial jail population all across the country, including in New York. And in effect, it is only sending people to jail who can't afford to pay their money bail. So that is people charged with the same crime. If you're wealthy, you go free and you're allowed to wait pending trial in the comfort of your own home. But if you're not wealthy, that means that you have to go to jail. And yeah, we're filling these jails with people who've never been convicted of crimes. And like many things in our criminal legal system, we know that this unjust practice of money bail is specifically and disproportionately harming Black and brown people, their families, and their communities. And so if we're going to address this problem of mass incarceration, we need to start at the front end and address the way money bail is ballooning the jail populations in New York and across the country. In New York, it's even more critical because we have plans to close the notorious Rikers Island jail complex, known as Torture Island. And in order to do that, we've got to get our jail population in New York City down to amount to where we can shutter that once and for all. And the bail reform that was passed last year, it takes a huge step in us being able to accomplish those goals, to decarcerate, to shut Rikers Island down. Experts believe that because of this bail reform alone, 40% of the pretrial jail population will be reduced across the state, which is a huge win in our efforts to reduce the devastating effects of mass incarceration. So that's why we needed bail reform. And that's why bail reform was courageously passed last year by the Senate, by the Assembly, and signed into law and the governor. And these reforms have just come into effect on January 1st of this year.
And so look, that all sounds good, but there's now pushback against this law. There's the idea that it might be weakened in the future. What is the argument that's being made against the bail reform package that was already passed?
Of course. So we know through lots of experience that any time that we try to take steps to curb the ability of our criminal legal system to put human beings in cages, what it was designed to do, that we're going to face tremendous backlash. And it's going to morph and it's going to rear its ugly head to try to avoid taking steps to shrink at all costs. And that's exactly what's happening now in New York. So the law has been in effect for 2 weeks, and already you have Republicans, you have criminal justice system operators like district attorneys and judges and police crying afoul that this bail reform, instead of making communities more whole and allowing families to stay together, avoiding caging people punitively pre-trial and providing more safety to them and their families and our communities, they're trying to say that this bail reform is making New York less safe, which is a fundamentally flawed argument and intellectually dishonest argument that's being manipulated by Republicans, particularly for political gain. And this narrative is being played out and played out in the media, echoing the most awful racist, fear-mongering rhetoric from eras long past that we thought we were past this tough on crime approach and fear-mongering approach.
So, and it seems like from some of the polls that this negative media coverage is starting to move people perhaps a little bit against the reform. You mentioned the sort of racist tropes that are being bandied about, but there's these assertions that in effect it's sort of an anti-Semitic law, because they're saying that this is now releasing people who are going to commit anti-Semitic hate crimes in New York. What is that about?
Right. I mean, this is just another ploy of the media to sell newspapers, particularly media that doesn't care about getting the facts right. And it's being politicized by people who want to maintain that social control over Black and brown communities and don't want to see them free and live and survive and thrive without being controlled and caged by our criminal legal system. So When we're talking about anti-Semitism, we first need to recognize that, yes, there is a huge spike in anti-Semitic rhetoric and attacks and harm being perpetuated all around this country. But those that rise does not rest and did not begin on January 1st, 2020, when bail reform went into effect in New York. It's countrywide, and that rise is associated with and caused by the rhetoric at the national stage, by the person that occupies the White House and the blank check and the dog whistles and the overt anti-Semitism that is emanating from the highest office in our land. Now, what is being said specifically in New York is actually, it's very deceitful too, because the main case people are referring to is a woman who was committing awful acts against people of the Jewish faith and perceived to be the Jewish faith and community in New York. She was slapping women and cursing at them because of their religion. And she was arrested and released multiple times before the bail reform actually went into effect. And so we need to get our facts straight when we're saying, what is the bail reform actually doing? And what are these cases that people are using to try to roll it back and take us back to an era of Nixon and Reagan-esque tough on crime policies that we know is only going to re-balloon our jail population?
Yeah. And for everyone watching this at home, this is definitely something to keep an eye on, both in New York, but also for the implications of, if the forces coming out against bail reform are successful there, it's likely that it will be repeated in other areas too. So this is obviously a very important issue. Wade McMullen, we really appreciate you joining us on the show today.
Thank you so much, John.
Thank you. Want to take a short break here? Let's stick around after this. This might be one of the most fascinating stories I've read in some time. It involves Jeff Bezos, obviously, billionaire, and one of our big allies, Mohammed bin Salman of Saudi Arabia. A United Nations investigation released today will report that Amazon founder Jeff Bezos' cell phone was hacked back in 2018 after he got a WhatsApp message that came from an account purportedly belonging to Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, according to a person with direct knowledge of the report. So a little bit more information about what this is going to show today. A UN official says in a new documentary film that Bezos' phone was infected with malware that was delivered via a message from Mohammed. Soon after the message was sent, a massive amount of data was extracted from Bezos' phone. So supposedly they have this sit down meeting and then they're like, hey, let's connect, whatever. And Mohammed bin Salman sent him an infected video or something like that, that then broke into his phone and allowed Mohammed bin Salman access to all of the information there. And apparently it appears ongoing access to that information in the future. Didn't see that coming.
Absolutely not, which again goes to, we talk about attacks and all the time, things that happen all the time, and identity thefts, and then when everyone's information got stolen from like Experian or one of those companies. I don't mean to disparage Experian if it wasn't them. When it comes to this type of level, you think, man, you figure people like Jeff Bezos probably have enough of a level of security on their information that this couldn't happen. Or maybe it goes through a certain system of things. Yeah. Maybe you realize that you're the richest man in the world, and maybe you can realize that you could do something else about this. But just that's the first fascinating part. But the second fascinating part is just the motivations from Mohammed bin Salman behind this.
Yeah,
in the
exactly.
First place.
So why would he do this? Not just for fun. There was apparently a political reason. So Bezos, who owns the Washington Post, Amazon, a million other things, has alleged through his security consultant Gavin De Becker that the Saudi government had access to Bezos' phone and gained private information. De Becker wrote in the Daily Beast that the Saudis were intent on harming Jeff Bezos since the Post began its relentless coverage of the murder of Jamal Khashoggi, a Post contributing columnist, in October of 2018. The thing is, the timeline doesn't necessarily work out. After Khashoggi was killed in Istanbul, Bezos became a target of waves of criticism from Saudi-based online trolls, but the alleged hacking took place 5 months earlier. So look, they apparently have good evidence that he did this. And it's not that much of a leap to imagine that Mohammed bin Salman would be willing to hack someone's phone, since he sent guys to literally hack a human being into pieces. Yeah. So let's not forget that. It doesn't appear to have been based specifically on this, though. Now, to be fair, Saudi embassy put out a tweet saying recent media reports that suggest the kingdom is behind the hacking of Mr. Bezos' phone are absurd. We call for an investigation of these claims so that we can have all the facts out. And I'm sure they'll do an investigation and they'll execute some underling who did not come up with this idea on their own, like they always do. But what a bizarre turn in the news.
Yeah, now what we did find out also is that like the information that they, what are they looking to receive? You know, anytime you're looking to hack someone's phone, especially someone of this level, you want to find out something you can hold over their heads possibly. Mm-hmm. And of course, we know about the affairs and the new women and all that stuff that would be embarrassing if not detrimental to just his personal life. And that appears to be some of the stuff that was discovered, which leads me to wonder, okay, I know guys that make $45,000 a year.
Yeah.
And they have burner phones.
Maybe Bezos. He could probably get a good deal on Amazon. Anyway, like on some kind of cheap Nokia or something.
I assume that the Verizon cost isn't too much that Bezos can't afford an extra couple of phones. Anyway, my point being, if you're going to have these connections with people of this stature and across so many levels, you got to have separate ways to communicate with them that isn't your direct personal line to your things that are like this.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't want to be critical, but that's kind of the first thing that came to mind.
It's weird because like you and I, we could buy a burner phone. He could buy a burner phone company if he wanted to, like just for his affairs.
I mean, James down the street was cheating on his wife and he's got a burner phone for the girlfriend.
Exactly.
I'm just saying.
Anyway, look, the reason this is important going forward is it should be another, this is not by any means the worst thing that Mohammed bin Salman of the Saudi government has done. It's probably like the 500th worst thing, but it's a reminder that this is who we're dealing with. One of Donald Trump's closest friends, closest allies, big military partners with them, just bear all that in mind. One little bit of news that I expect to see more on the future is that apparently, according to this UN report, the initial move from the Saudi government to silence Jamal Khashoggi, do you know what that came in response to? It was a speech that Jamal Khashoggi gave way back in December 2016, where he was critical about Donald Trump's ascent to the US presidency. Mm-hmm. And this report notes that the Saudi government was working as hard as they possibly can to develop a good relationship with the incoming new administration. Not saying anything.
Why would they want a good relationship with Donald Trump?
Trump, check your phone, get the viruses taken out because they almost certainly have hacked you too. He would click on literally anything.
Well, he is definitely, we also know the story about him tweeting before his first few months in office, tweeting from an unsecured phone.
Yeah. And they kept trying to get him to have actual security and he refused to. Could be consequential if it opens him up to blackmail. They apparently tried to, like they implied to Bezos that they knew about his affair before it was made public by the National Enquirer. So this is not outside of the range of possibility.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're gonna take a short break, we'll come back, another guest is gonna join us after this. I am very excited now to welcome to the show, friend of the show, host of the Course Correction Podcast and correspondent for the Doha Debates, Niloufar Hedayat. Welcome to the Damage Report.
Hey, how are you?
Great to have you here. And so I'm excited about the launch of your podcast. It is Course Correction. We're gonna play a little bit of the trailer for everyone, but before we do that, give us an idea of sort of what is the mission statement of the podcast?
So it's a very simple one. The point being that we live in a world that seems really fractured, divided, no one's talking to one another, and all of the problems that we face, whether ecological, political, or social, all seem to be overwhelming. And this podcast is aiming to make those problems personal and find solutions that you wouldn't otherwise have thought about.
So, okay, that's a great intro. Let's go to a little bit of the podcast, give people an idea.
Sometimes the world's problems can seem overwhelming.
Scientists warn no part of the world will be spared from the climate crisis.
The wooden fishing boat packed with migrants tipped over, sending hundreds plunging into the sea.
Cape Town's main water resource has never been so low. South Africans were warned Cape Town would run dry.
Our problems can seem so overwhelming that we simply have to turn away. But we can't afford to keep this up anymore. We need to find solutions.
I couldn't agree more. And so you say you wanted to make it personal. You don't want people to turn away. And so how are some of the ways that you're engaging with these problems through the podcast?
So it's a 10-episode series, the first series. And the aim is basically to go through some of the world's biggest challenges, because the Doha Debates is also a live debate show. So we have six different things that we tackled last year, from capitalism's problem and obsession with growth through to lots of issues to do with the loss of trust in governments and the refugee crisis. And I myself am a refugee from Afghanistan. So the first episode of the podcast is a very personal one. And each episode begins with me challenging myself. I mean, I like to think of course correction as a remedy to Adam Ruins Everything. You know that show where he goes around just basically wrecking everything?
Yeah.
This show is designed to be the opposite of that. It's designed to give you some hope and a way to change behavior. So, for example, the Cape Town episode that looks at the global water crisis, which was one of our Doha debates that you can watch on YouTube right now, I had to live on 50 liters of water a day. And that sounds like a whole bunch, but when you consider showering, when you consider washing clothes and food prep and everything like that, it becomes incredibly hard to do. And in the end, like, I remember going out for a party and coming home, and I had only 2 minutes of water use left that day, and I had to choose between washing the gunk out of my hair or my nasty dance floor feet. And I can promise you, John, it was not a pretty sight, but I did it for the people. It seems to be something that the audiences, my audiences at Doha Debates, are yearning for, a way to engage with these problems in bite-sized ways so we don't all feel overwhelmed all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, that is fascinating. It does initially seem like it would be a lot of water, but when you think about like running water from a faucet or from a shower, you know, I know Trump says it's just drip, 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 but it's actually a lot of drips. You can go through that pretty fast. So, you know, just a little bit more on that. As you're like trying to prioritize in terms of cooking and all of that, what are some of the challenges you faced?
Yeah, I mean, let's be real about it. Like, I live in a first world country. I'm here talking to you from my mom's house in London. I have the privilege of being able to run that faucet all I want. But when I spoke to people in that episode of the podcast who had to live this, it became clear to me my first world privilege. You know, I grew up in Pakistan, I grew up in Saudi, I grew up in Afghanistan, and I know what it's like. People in the global south live on 50 liters of water a day or less anyway. Mm-hmm. So all it basically did was mentally check my privilege. And now, you know, I recorded that episode a year ago, and it's literally changed my behavior. So one of the final episodes that we'll get to is going to be me talking to a conflict negotiator called Dr. Govinda Clayton, who's actually part of the Doha Debates team. And he helps me work through all the guilt I feel, you know, the first world guilt I feel, how I feel when I have to walk away as a journalist who's been covering war and politics and problems of the global south for years. When I have to walk away from those people and I get to go to the hotel and have my lovely shower, you know, yeah. All of that is brilliant, great privilege. But I've always had a guilt associated with that. And this show just helps me get so much off my chest. Course correction is really kind of helped me as a journalist come to terms with the fact that I can't just be a bystander anymore. It's already too late for so many of the world's biggest problems. And we can engage on an individual level. And that's the point of it.
Yeah. Oh, that is awesome. And I know that you, another one of your challenges involves not using plastic. That's something that I've been thinking a lot about over the past year, just how we're surrounded by plastic. And I know you have a tough conversation with your mom. Really fascinating. And so where can people find the podcast? Maybe what's a little bit more that they can expect to be revealed over the 10 episode run?
Can I give you one of my favorite episodes that sure. You haven't seen yet that's coming up? So one of my favorite episodes that we have just recorded is all about how to have difficult conversations. So I end up sitting face to face with my best friend who has completely the opposite political perspectives as me, right? And we all know an uncle, a cousin, an auntie, a best friend who's the same, right? She voted for Brexit. She doesn't like immigration at all. She thinks people are taking all kind of the jobs in the UK here. I don't agree with any of that. And so all we do is not talk about it. And I ended up calling her a racist for her views, which I now am ashamed about, because here I am on my high perch as a progressive liberal person sitting in my little silo judging other people. And in this episode, I speak to Sami Rangel, who is now working actively with white supremacists and working with people who have committed crimes or been incarcerated, and trying to teach them how to have these difficult conversations and overcome prejudice. And that, again, is something that's really hard to do. So that episode about having those difficult conversations is hard. But to your point about the plastic episode, which, by the way, is available to download and stream right now on all the podcast platforms. You just have to search for Course Correction. I carried around with me, John, you'll love this, like my plastic bag of shame for 5 whole days. And I would walk around London town like an absolute madman. And what the point was I was going to collect every disposable cup, every spork, every fork, every cup that I used in a given day to come home and see what I was using in a week. And I challenge you, John, to do this because it is frightening. It is frightening. I really couldn't believe. Here I am, like thinking, I'm a vegan. Like, I'm doing it. Like, I'm saving the planet. And, you know, a plastic bag will outlive me.
Yeah, that's true.
It will outlive you.
Yeah, yeah. There's produce that will outlive me. Yeah. Well, look, it sounds awesome. You know, I can't wait to listen to your journey. I didn't know that by the end of the 10 episodes, you're covered in garbage and you smell. But that does make for a really interesting arc. The podcast is Course Correction. Niloufar, thank you so much for joining us. Can't wait to see more of it. And for everybody at home, I always tell you to rate and review our podcast. Please do that for Course Correction as well. Listen to the first episode. If you enjoy it, give it a 5-star review. Or write down a little review as well. I'm sure that Niloufar would really appreciate that. We're going to take one last break. Come back for a bit more. One of the biggest battles going on in the Democratic primary right now is between Joe Biden and reality and getting him to acknowledge where he has stood on the most important issues of the day. Bankruptcy law, the war in Iraq, healthcare, but also Social Security. So he recently got really mad when the Bernie campaign implied that in the past he has said that he would be supportive of cuts to Social Security. In fact, he put out a tweet to this end saying, I've been fighting to protect and expand Social Security for my whole career. Any suggestion otherwise is just flat out wrong. We got a bit of the ad that he embedded in that tweet. Take a look at this.
As Democrats, we can't launch dishonest attacks against fellow Democrats. We have to beat Donald Trump. Now Bernie's campaign has unleashed a barrage of negative attacks on Joe Biden. They've even accused Joe Biden of supporting Paul Ryan's cuts to Social Security. Bernie's campaign is not telling the truth.
Okay, so their attacks, they're just out of smears. Note that they were not, those headlines were not from New York Times articles. It was opinion pieces, probably from a Biden surrogate. But anyway, here's the thing. Bernie did attack him on this, and rightfully so. Here was a response ad that Bernie put out.
When I argued that we should freeze federal spending, I meant Social Security as well. I meant Medicare and Medicaid. I meant veterans benefits. I meant every single solitary thing in the government. And I not only tried it once, I tried it twice, I tried it a third time, and I tried it a fourth time.
Well, we've got some bad news for them. We are not going to cut Social Security. We're going to expand benefits.
So, like, it's not smears, it's the truth, okay? Consider, like, coming to grips with what you've actually done in the past. Consider it once, consider it twice, consider it a third time. Tell the truth about what you've said, okay? This is not like 30 years ago. Like, we have access to this video, we have access to the transcripts. What you have said and done is on tape. You cannot deny it anymore.
This is one of the biggest things that I think a lot of old school candidates can't come to grips with, is understanding we're in 2020 now, and forget it. Forget 2020. Go back to 2018, 17, 16. Mm-hmm. We can go on at the drop of a hat, grab our phones, and just get, oh, let me find out what he said. And it can happen. It's too easy to let this just go. And then I'm amazed they don't have any advisors. They go, hey, Joe, let's have a different approach to this, because everyone knows it's true. And it smears are something that people do when it's off subject or when it's untrue.
Yeah.
Both of these things, it's a subject matter that people care about, and it's true. Yeah. You have to have a different approach.
It would be one thing if it was like, we were in different fiscal times back then. Now, I don't support these cuts. In fact, I support increasing Social Security, which is what he says he does now. But that's not what he's saying to the American people. He's saying, I never propose those cuts, which means we can keep responding with videos like this.
People know we have to fix Social Security. They know we can't grow our way to a solution. They know we're going to have to make some tough decisions. They're ready to make these decisions. They're ready to step up. We have to be ready to straightforwardly tell them what we're about to do.
Yeah, at least straightforwardly tell us what you were about to do back in 2008 when you were talking about the hard choices that have to be made for Social Security. That's not the 90s. That was just 13 or 14 years ago.
It's one of the few the career paths of politician that where you can do something, say something, have a record, have a job that you've done in a certain way, and then have to and then completely cover it up. You go for a new job and you have something on your resume, you can't say, yeah, I never did that.
Yeah.
You can't just say it that way.
Can't.
But you're the most one of the most powerful people and you're allowed to do that.
Exactly. And look, as AOC tweeted, she was going through all this, she said, I don't understand why some folks run as if the internet doesn't exist.
Exactly.
But the reason is that the media is protecting Joe Biden from accountability on these issues. So many people still don't know where he stands on this on these issues. And if the media was doing their job, that would not be a concern. You would have to come to grips with what you've said and done in the past.
Kids can't get away with stuff like this.
Exactly. Thank you as always. It's always great to have you here on Big News Wednesdays.
Yeah.
Thank you. We will see you tomorrow morning. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.